Nissan's electric vehicles run on a special electricity. Not the electricity that turns on light bulbs or runs through your outlets. I'm talking that spine-tingling goosebump feeling that electrifies your body and soul. It could be the simple win of leaving on time for your morning commute or scoring the largest deal of your career. Nissan is continuously evolving and changing the game through electric vehicle engineering. Because the electricity of their cars not only moves engines, it also moves the emotions of those who drive them. To learn more about Nissan's electric vehicle lineup, visit www.nissanusa.com.
At Boost Mobile, passion and determination fuel what it means to get after it. That's why they've built their offers, keeping in mind those who go the extra mile. Boost Mobile is partnered with champions from across the nation to empower you with devices and service that won't break the bank. Join Boost Mobile and get after it. Switch to Boost Mobile now and get a free Samsung Galaxy A23 5G phone powered by America's largest 5G networks. See offer details at BoostMobile.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Tis the season of making the perfect wish list and the perfect playlist with Bose Quiet Comfort Ultra earbuds and headphones. Breakthrough immersive audio uses spatialized sound to bring your fave holiday classics to life. And world-class noise cancellation ensures a not-so-typical silent night and an epic holiday party of one. It's everything music should make you feel, taken to new holiday highs. Visit Bose.com/iHeart this holiday season and shop sound that's more than just a present.
And we return to Our American Stories. And up next, a story that's one of a kind. In the early 1950s through 70s, a son of penniless Czech immigrants somehow managed to amass an arsenal of military aircraft, albeit unflyable, in his own backyard. His name was Walter Suplata. Here to tell his story is Wally Suplata, Walter's son, and the author of The B-25 in the Backyard. Here's our own Monty Montgomery with a story.
Our story begins in the home state of the Wright brothers, Ohio. Here's Wally Suplata on the eccentric airplane collector that was his father.
Even as a young boy, I realized my father was different. As a result, the way we lived was different. But though we had airplanes parked near our house, it wasn't anything I paid much attention to in my early years. The planes didn't fly or do anything. Days, months, sometimes years would go by, the planes doing nothing, sitting in the same spot. For many reasons, this is an improbable story that never would have happened in the hands of any other person than the gifted eccentric who was my father. The Great Depression financially devastated his family when my father was 6 years old. And things only got worse when Dad's abusive and alcoholic father abandoned him and his family when he was 8 years old. Later, to help support a struggling family, Dad was forced to go to work at an early age and thus was unable to attend high school. Despite such harsh and difficult times, there was one interest that fascinated my father and brought him great happiness as a young man: airplanes. It's been said that model airplanes that kids like my father made back then were the equivalent to what video games became to more recent generations of children. Adding to his fascination with airplanes, the major events that occurred during his childhood, such as Charles Lindbergh being the first to fly across the Atlantic, made front page headlines, exciting people of all nations. Unfortunately, a house fire was yet another hardship for my father to endure. Not only did my father and his family lose their home, but almost all of the model airplanes he spent countless hours building were lost in the fire. Yet his devotion to aircraft and their history was unshaken by the loss. He would soon turn to a collection of real airplanes that would become his lifelong passion. There's various versions of this joke about airplanes. What is it that makes airplanes fly? Is it the lift of the wings, or the power of the engine, or the skill of the pilot? And the answer to the joke is no, it's none of those things. What makes airplanes fly is money. Sometimes a lot of money. Going back to the beginning of World War II, one thing you did not need money for was to join the Army Air Corps and become a pilot. But serving the military wasn't meant to be for him. Dad had a serious speech problem with a stutter. The draft board informed my father he was completely unqualified to serve in the U.S. military. That put a big monkey on Dad's back, especially with his older brother George serving in the Army and coming home from the Philippines as a war hero. Still, Dad did what he could and worked in a Cleveland factory making aircraft fuel pumps during the war. When the war ended, he, like so many working to build aircraft and aircraft components, suddenly found themselves without a job. So it was after the war that he got into the scrap metal business, working to recycle the large aircraft engines coming out of their crates. He was occasionally able to purchase an engine now and then, and eventually his first few aircraft. He started with an American Eagle biplane. Next, he got an airplane that's a single engine trainer called the Vaulty BT-15 trainer. It's a propeller plane with one engine. In 1951, he purchased his first Navy Corsair, a fighter plane flown by the Navy, operated off aircraft carriers in World War II. Dad paid $100 for his first Corsair. He paid $500 for the second one and $200 for the third. So for a total price of $800, he had three Corsairs. Flyable Corsair today, you're gonna look at spending somewhere around $2.5 million, plus or minus, but you know, certainly not the kind of numbers we're talking. Dad eventually got hired for a construction career as a union carpenter, which for him was a big break. And with a little extra money in his wallet, he set his sights on bigger aircraft. But a big frustration with Dad was that he was always out of money. He had five kids, and Dad was often unemployed during the winter months. Over many, many years, if you could find a day when he had more than $50 in his wallet or $1,000 in the bank, those were some really good days. If there's one thing the Great Depression taught him, it was the value of being self-sufficient and being able to improvise with the things you do have when you can't afford what you don't have. The best example of Dad's self-sufficient aptitude involves his need for a crane to assemble the aircraft after towing them home. He could not afford a crane. So instead, he used a variety of items from some junked trucks and junked airplanes to build his own boom truck lift that we all refer to affectionately as the boom tractor, without spending $50, if even that. And always thinking of controlling cost, Dad never kept a battery in it. Instead, we mooched off the family Suburban and borrowed its battery on the days we used the tractor. Yet more penny pinching to the extreme, the tractor sometimes ran the Suburban battery dead. But Dad refused to buy a battery charger. Instead, we'd put the dead battery back in the Suburban, get the vehicle rolling downhill, and then pop the clutch to start the Suburban's engine, and then let the Suburban's engine generator recharge the battery. What he really wanted to do if he had more money was to go out to Arizona. Arizona is a state where there were giant aircraft boneyards. Most military aircraft from World War II ended up being scrapped in Arizona. And you could buy airplanes basically for their value in scrap metal. But he didn't have the money to go there. And in those days, nobody had credit cards. So if you didn't have the money, you just couldn't do it. But he still dreamed of Arizona. I called it the airplane land of milk and honey. He talked about it all the time. And Dad would show me photographs of the boneyards where they were melting these airplanes down. I mean, as far as the eye can see, miles and miles of airplanes lined up, all to be melted down and destroyed. Closest he got to it doing that, he bought a junked school bus. He bought the bus for about $100 at a salvage yard. It was a 1945 school bus made by the White Motor Company. It had the typical rust from being in Ohio. You could tell a few kids had played in that bus. It was a beater. So Dad was gonna make a camper out of it and, like stories of West, go out west to Arizona and hunt for some airplanes. But he never could get to Arizona, so the bus sat in Ohio. And then a good friend of his from then had took over what had now become a magnesium plant. And he called my dad. He said, "Walter, I don't know what's going on here." He was shocked. He got some really rare, unusual engines in a scrap bid. This guy, Mike the Scrap Man, said, I don't think I should scrap these engines. They're pretty rare engines." And so he sold a whole lot of about 10 engines to my father for like $100. Dad didn't have a truck, so what did he do? He takes a school bus and gets a torch, and he cuts a seam along the rear wall to where there's the standard emergency exit at the back of the school bus, but it's not wide enough, so he gets a torch, and he cuts the metal so he can bend both sides of the door open to make the bus wider to fit those engines in his bus. And that's how I got those rear engines home, was to haul them in his school bus. So that was the first trip with the bus, getting these very, very rare engines. And Dad realized, hey, I can haul stuff with this thing. Some strange things happen.
And you've been listening to Wally Soplata tell the story of his father, Walter's passion, almost obsession, for airplanes. The story of the B-25 in the backyard continues here on Our American Stories.
At Ford, we pride ourselves on building strong, capable vehicles. But we're only as strong as the people who drive them. People like you, who don't just see an F-150 or a Ford Super Duty, but see what they can build with it. Who look at a 450-horsepower Mustang and envision where it could take them. Or see the new Bronco or Bronco Sport and think, what that thing needs is an off-road dirt bath. Because built Ford proud is more than just a set of words. It's a pact between us, our drivers, and what we can do together. And we'll do it. Built Ford proud.
Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Horsepower and torque ratings based on premium fuel per SAE J1349. Always consult the owner's manual before off-road driving. Know your terrain and trail difficulty and use appropriate safety gear. Ford is committed to the preservation of the environment and treading lightly.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help so you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there, check out this news from Boost Infinite. You can now get the latest iPhone every year and unlimited wireless for just $60 a month. This includes the new iPhone 15 Pro. Now, just think about that. You get the latest iPhone, not just this year, every year. The Earth goes round the sun, you get the latest iPhone and unlimited wireless from Boost Infinite and free candy. No, no free candy. But you know those people who always have the latest tech gizmo before everyone else? Now you could be one of those people without even trying. And when people ask you, is that the latest iPhone? You could just be all cool about it and say, oh, yeah, I mean, I get the latest one every year. You know, that's just how I roll. That can be you with Boost Infinite, infinitely better. To learn more, visit BoostInfinite.com. That's BoostInfinite.com.
Terms apply. After 30 gigabytes, service may be slowed. Receive a comparable iPhone model each year with an acceptable trade-in every year. Requires credit qualification and 36-month phone financing agreement.
And we return to Our American Stories and the story of Walter Soplata, an eccentric airplane collector, as told by his son, Wally. When we last left off, we were learning about the motivations of Walter and the school bus he bought to take mostly unflyable, decommissioned weapons of war into his own backyard. Let's return to Wally, who's about to tell one heck of a story about the school bus's finest moment.
Though Dad had gone on to become a carpenter, when he was laid off, he wasn't going to sit around and do nothing. Well, he still had contacts in the scrap metal business. He bids on a jet airplane in Boston, Massachusetts, the Cutlass Jet. It's at a base called South Weymouth Naval Air Station. And it's a jet fighter plane that's being sold for scrap. The scrap paperwork tells that its acquisition cost to the Navy was in excess of $1 million. And Dad says, oh, what the heck, I probably won't win, but he offers a bid of $200 for the jet fighter plane. And a few weeks later, he's kind of surprised in the mail that he is the highest bidder. And he's really kind of nervous. It's 600 miles away. He has yet to haul an airplane more than about 40, 50 miles. And as he studies more and more about this jet airplane, it's quite big. It's a Navy airplane, which means it's heavy because it's going to operate from aircraft carriers. He does not have a truck, and he doesn't have a lot of money. So this is really the school bus's big story. So he drives it to the Navy base, gets there just fine. And the Navy people, of course, think, oh, he's using the bus as his camper while he's staying here to work on this jet he just purchased. Little did they know that Dad's going to do more cutting with the torch, and he plans to cut the rest of the back wall of the bus off and stuff the fuselage of this Navy jet inside the bus for its trip home. This, of course, raises the eyebrows of the civil servants working at the disposal yard. So they call in the Navy brass and say, you know, what's going on here? My dad honestly remembered him retelling the story when he got back that he was really afraid that they would just lock him up as a lunatic. I mean, you're going to do what? You're going to haul this jet airplane inside your school bus. It just doesn't make any sense. But he explains it. It's all I got. I mean, they even ask him some questions like, hey, when's the rest of your crew coming? You know, and they, of course, expect a scrapyard crew with a... And Dad understood they kind of expected he'd show up with a big flatbed 18-wheeler semi-truck. But he hasn't got a crew and he hasn't got the truck. He's just got the school bus. And there's another issue. Rightly so, the military's become concerned about letting go of their combat airplanes. In theory, you could buy a jet airplane and maybe sell to some foreign country that then decides to use our own weapon against us. Very valid concern. And so they came up with some rules about demilitarization about this time. They said no part of the airplane can be bigger than 4 feet in length. Basically, you've got to chop it up and destroy it before it leaves the base. He wants to display this jet in his kind of private museum in his backyard. And just about time he really thinks he's going to get locked up as a nutcase. Some of the senior brass come to visit with him, and he sees they've got wings on their chest. These guys are aviators. And Dad would later say, he goes, I don't know why I did it, but I took my airplane scrapbook with me. And I ran in the bus and got the scrapbook and started showing him photographs of the planes he had. The Air Race Corsair that won the 1947 Cleveland National Air Races. Another Corsair from the Akron Naval Air Station. It turned out some of the officers had flown Corsairs. And they, oh my gosh, you've got Corsairs. A great Navy aircraft. Good for you. They go, maybe this guy's really not a nutcase. He's actually got airplanes and he's displaying them. They said, what do you charge to the public? He said, I don't charge anything. People just come over and look at the planes anytime they want. And I really like to save this cutlass. So they're like, well, we don't know what to do. And then so they let Dad go look at the airplane, and they're not sure whether to give the okay on any of this. But they said, go ahead and start working out, look at it, see what you think. My father didn't get to go to high school, but he's a very smart man. A lot of genius inside of that man's head. So he's crawling on the plane, and he comes back to the brass, and he says, I've got an idea here. And they go, what is it? He said, well, I understand you don't want the airplane to fly again. I get that. But I want to take my torch, and I'm going to cut chunks out of the wing, and I'm going to hacksaw some parts out of the fuselage, and I'm going to make the airplane structurally very weak. It'll be strong enough to stand up together on display in my yard. But if somebody tried to fly it, it wouldn't be able to take the stress of flight, and the airplane would break up in flight. And so the officer said, well, we got some airplane mechanics on base, and we'll have them inspect the airplane when you're done. And if they concur that the airplane can't fly again, then we'll let you keep it in one piece. And sure enough, when he got the airplane inspected, the Navy mechanics assured the officer, said, yeah, this airplane can never fly again. It'll come apart. It's just a flaw. It has weakened it to the point that it's not going to fly ever. And so with that, they let that keep the airplane. But the next challenge, of course, the big challenge, is getting this thing home. They advised Dad they were worried about, besides the jet going in the bus, they said, you know, it's really going to be very heavy, you know, for that school bus to carry all this weight. And Dad kind of thought about that. But he said, well, that means they have to make another trip to Boston. So finally, I got a photo of this, by the way, just so we don't think I'm crazy. I got photographs of this. There's a crane, I'm looking at it right now, holding up the bus. is being pushed inside the school bus, it doesn't exactly fit. There's a dad cut a slot through the roof for the cable of the crane to hold the airplane up. But it kept getting stuck, and finally somebody got the idea to get a bulldozer and push from behind and have dad sit in the driver's seat, hold the brakes and block the tires and push the thing in with a bulldozer. And I said earlier that it's kind of a good thing the bus came from Ohio and there was a lot of rust, because basically the body, right where the wall joins the floor, it just said, I've had enough, and it split out and it ripped apart, which caused the Navy guys to name it the Banana Bus. And his dad described it, he's in the driver's seat, there's the sound of the bulldozer, there's screeching metal and popping and all kinds of bad sounds, and the nose is coming forward and forward, closer to him and closer to him, and finally dawns on him, if this thing suddenly goes cockeyed one side or the other, it could crush me to death up here in the driver's seat if anything got out of alignment. But it went okay, and finally they got the thing all the way in, and the very nose of the jet is right up against the driver's seat. As they're getting ready to go, Dad learns that the Navy personnel have been gambling a little bit and placing bets on whether he'll make it or not. So he's heard this going on for a couple days, and as he's about to drive away, he asks one of the guys, says, hey, what's the highest bet thus far? You know, how many guys think I'll make it? And the guy laughed and said, nobody thinks you're going to make it. But the highest bet is 50 miles. He did make it home okay. He said, man, I should have taken their money. They'll bet on me not making it, and I made it. But he didn't come home entirely unscathed. As he pointed out to us, he got arrested like 8 times. The biggest mistake he made was to drive the school bus on the New York State Thruway. And it might have been later in Pennsylvania, he told a fun story. He said a cop pulled him over and, took the sight into this airplane in the bus. And the one officer said, I'm not going to call you into the station. And Dad goes, why not? And he goes, if I make a call to the station that I've got a guy with a jet airplane in a school bus, they'll think I'm drinking. So I'm not saying anything. And so I was surprised to hear that. But that's the story my father told. And just the whole bold movement to get this jet fighter plane home under such, difficult conditions gave Dad a really strong sense of confidence. Hey, if I could do that, got away with a big airplane in a big way. It really was a turning point for him to just really get a lot of confidence that nothing can stop me.
And it gave Walter the confidence to get bigger planes, including a B-25 bomber called Wild Cargo, that, unlike many of the other planes Walter would put in his backyard, eventually flew again. But what does Wally, his son, think about his father's obsession with all things aviation?
Only in America could Walter A. Zapata, the son of penniless Czech immigrants, single-handedly accomplish so much in an obsessive mission to save historic aircraft, particularly from World War II. The most stunning and sobering aspect of his collection was the fact that if he had not saved these treasures, it was all but certain that most, if not all of them, would have been cut up for scrap metal. He alone, on a shoestring budget of a carpenter raising 5 children, had taken on this Herculean endeavor in a way that no one before him or after him could ever hope to duplicate.
And great job, as always, by Monty Montgomery on the piece. And a special thanks to Wally Zapata. And by the way, the book is The B-25 in the Backyard, and you can find it on Amazon or any place where books are sold. The story of Walter Zapata, as told by his son Wally, here on Our American Stories.
Introducing Uber Teen Accounts. If you have a teenager, you probably drive them around a lot. Maybe you're even driving them right now. New Uber Teen Accounts are a parent-supervised Uber account with always-on safety features that let your teen request a ride when you can't take them yourself. Your teen gets to ride with a highly rated driver, and you get to follow along with real-time notifications and live trip tracking in your Uber app. Add your teen to your Uber account today. Available in select locations. See app for details.
Crypto is like finance, but different. It doesn't care when you invest, trade, or save. Do it on weekends, or at 5 a.m., or on Christmas Day, at 5 a.m. Crypto is finance for everyone, everywhere, all the time. Kraken, see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures, Inc., PVI, DBA, Kraken. View PVI's disclosures at kraken.com/legal/disclosures.
Small Business Saturday is November 25th, so let's go shop small with American Express. Because everything you want is in the neighborhood. Your new style is in the neighborhood.
Let's try this on.
The ingredients are in the neighborhood. A special gift? Definitely in the neighborhood. November 25th is Small Business Saturday, and it's all in the neighborhood. Let's go shop small with the powerful backing of American Express.